Good morning. We're going to move more to, from the theoretical to the practical here and discuss UCLA Film and Television Archives' recent acquisition of a groundbreaking LBGT news and public affairs television series, In the Life. In our brief presentation, our aim is to better acquaint you with this important television series as it relates to its long-term preservation, online accessibility, and the complicated issues surrounding rights management and commercial viability. Back in 2010, the archive and the and the Moving Image Archive Studies program at UCLA organized an international conference, where Rick Prelinger was our keynote speaker, by the way, with the Institut National Audiovisuel in Paris, about the transition from analog to digital archives. It was determined that migrating the archive's moving image content online for educational and commercial purposes should be given high priority. Increasingly, the public at large expects the archive to be what we call performative, that is, to be visible online. Archives and libraries unable to provide online real-time access to their collections will be rendered obsolete, we believe, and the intrinsic value of their collections will decline commensurately. Getting the UCLA Archives moving image online was a daunting task and is a daunting task, particularly since the Archives website in 2010 was still a text-only version that had been more or less static since 1996. In 2010, the archive then uploaded its first online interactive portal titled UCLA Preserves Silent Animation. Thanks to generous funding provided by the National Film Preservation Foundation, the Silent Animation website was our first streamed content, launching even before the archive began upgrading its entire website in 2011. This new animation website included a scholarly essay by Mart Langer and 11 mostly complete animation shorts from the period before 1928, all in public domain. Even though all of the intended animated shorts to be included on the website were public domain, the archive could not include one preservation title on the initial lineup due to the fact that the character of Felix the Cat was still very much under copyright control. In 2011, the archive launched its LA Rebellion website, which grew out of the archive's film exhibition, LA Rebellion, Creating a New Black Cinema. Extensive research, documentation, analysis, preservation, and restoration were necessary to prepare this film program, which contributed to online content and actually significantly expanded resources and provided interactive features such as a blog. The website features biographies, filmographies, and oral histories from LA Rebellion filmmakers, as well as many Project One films, the students' first films made at UCLA while they were students. The biographies detail career paths for 27 filmmakers. With the filmmakers' permission, UCLA is streaming the student films and short films so that visitors to the website may view certain works in their entirety. Film stills, photos of the artists and of events are also featured on the website, as is the exhibition catalog as a PDF download. We received at least one takedown notice from ASCAP because filmmakers had not cleared their music. These were African-American filmmakers, and for the most part, they just used the music without clearing copyright. The archive's Hearst newsreel collection bears an incredible potential for online accessibility. Containing over 27 million feet of Hearst-produced newsreels from 1914 to 1967, the collection represents images of the events and people that shaped the 20th century, from war fronts to marble championships, international summits to Hollywood premieres. Preserving and protecting this significant cultural and historical legacy is at the heart of the archive's mission. Unfortunately, the archive was fortunately, the archive was gifted rights not only to the Hearst collection, but also to several other newsreels and documentary collections listed on the early research portal mock-up shown here. Although much of this content is available for on-site viewing through our archive and research center, significant financial and technical obstacles have delayed our ability to expedite online availability. One being it's 27 million feet of nitrate film that has to be digitized. Rectifying the situation is an institutional priority so that researchers can locate and order the newsreel content directly rather than be confined to the cumbersome analog technologies currently utilized, namely the telephone. We hope to have good news on this front in the very near future. Which brings me to the focus of this presentation. In 2005, UCLA Film and Television Archive partnered with OutFest to create the OutFest Legacy Project for LBGT Moving Image Preservation. Today, with over 35,000 holdings, the Legacy Project has established itself as a leading archive for LBGT media preservation. It is one of the largest publicly accessible collections of LBGT films in the world and a vital resource for students, faculty, and researchers interested in LBGT images. However, as the Legacy Project moved forward towards its 10-year anniversary, we noted that none of the 35,000-plus holdings were available for online research except for a very few short pieces. Fortunately, the digital access stars aligned for UCLA and OutFest in the form of the television show In the Life. As film historian Steve Tropiano notes of In the Life, the variety talk show hybrid was unique. Quote, before In the Life, there had yet to be a comedy, drama, or nonfiction series on commercial network, broadcast cable, or pay cable television focusing exclusively on the lives of gay men and lesbians. The landmark coming out of Ellen was still 5 years away, and we would have to wait until the turn of the century for the debut of national cable channel of our own, namely Logo TV, unquote. Even before hitting the airwaves, on just 6 PBS stations in June of 1992, the prospect of an LBGT-centric television series was met with instant opposition, mostly from the religious right. That shrill reaction spoke directly to one of the implicit goals of the series, namely to counter homophobia and transphobia by introducing these communities to people of all walks of life nationwide. Ironically, PBS never contributed to the production of the show. In the Life was completely funded by individual contributions, funding from foundation and bequests, and one corporate sponsor. Yet by its second season in 1993, some PBS stations were even utilizing segments from the show to support their own fundraising efforts with great success. At the height of its run, the independently produced In the Life aired on about 200 PBS stations across the United States. The series was a multi-Emmy Award nominee and a recipient of several LBGT Media Awards. However, with rising production costs and LBGT representation in mainstream media making notable gains, a somewhat controversial decision was made in 2012 to end the show. Its creators and board of directors sought a suitable home to ensure that the series would live on for decades to come. When In the Life representatives came to UCLA to discuss a potential donation, it quickly became apparent that they were not just looking for archival storage. Rather, they wanted a program to have a vibrant online presence in perpetuity. Thus, just as the production of In the Life was funded through private individuals and foundations, so too did the In the Life board's partners help fund a web-based portal for the show's afterlife. The inclusion of rights in the donation has happily brought the prospect of long-term financial support to the entire Legacy Project collection at UCLA. However, that In the Life rights proved to be more elusive than we first imagined due to a maze of short-term rights clearances and the fact that the program made liberal use of fair use as a news program. It's just the next slide. Yeah. Okay. But first, to better understand the show's historic reach, we'll now take a look at a 3-minute clip charting the program's evolution. Afterwards, my colleague, UCLA motion picture archivist Todd Weiner, will take you behind the scenes regarding some of the inventory, cataloging, and digital access issues surrounding this acquisition.
It was really very radical to do what we were doing.
Now, I know a lot of you are thinking, gosh, not another show on gays and lesbians on television.
It was great to be the first host. And I don't really think I knew the import of it because it was so crazy busy backstage. I mean, Julie Taymor had nothing on John Scagliotti. He had everything planned. He packed a variety show.
Very little material had been on public television. To have a voice, this was a major leap.
That piece of film, Vito and I made that in 1983.
Todd and Martha.
This historic public television broadcast was quickly met with opposition.
It seems that the broadcasting apologists are hiding behind Big Bird, Mr. Rogers, and Masterpiece Theater, laying down their quality smokescreen while they shovel out funding for gay and lesbian variety shows.
Bob Dole called us out on the floor of Congress, saying that we were hiding behind the smokescreen to slip in these horrific gay images.
Daddy and his roommate are very happy together, and I'm happy too. These are the two copies that were out on the shelves. They are now in my possession, and librarian, you're not getting them back.
The right always has us at the center of their crosshairs in the culture wars, and especially in the early 90s, when we as a community, and In the Life, documenting this movement of our community saying, no, we are not going to be silent, we will not be invisible, we want our American rights.
The gay movement is the spear point in the culture war against the Judeo-Christian value system.
We were trying to counter the images that were being put out there about us, that we're sick and we're sinful and we're destroying our children.
We did not accept the debate that the rest of the mainstream was accepting, which is that somehow homosexuals, gay people, whatever, were no good.
Black lesbians, I don't know who put that, let them go by, but somebody should have been all over that.
If we accept the homosexual agenda, we will be destroying the integrity of the marriage-based family, the innocence of childhood, and indeed the very fabric of our society.
As time went along, the folks who are running In the Life decided the gay community needs news.
The feeling here today is incredible. There's a true sense of unity.
We have come out to reach out across America.
The gay community needs to know what's happening with it.
Act up! Fight back! Fight AIDS!
Not just in New York or in Washington or LA, but in other places around the country. You're letting people know in Ohio or in Kansas or Texas or wherever that they're gay people. They're gay people everywhere.
It was the first authentic programming produced by LGBT people for LGBT people.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's great to be here. So, as donated to the Outfest UCLA Legacy Project, the In the Life collection constituted over 9,000 physical holdings, including 1-inch video reels, Betacam, Digibeta, VHS, mini-DV, DVDs, CDs, as well as digital files on external hard drives and a server. So following the end of production, the In the Life team packed up and shipped 20 years of production materials, necessitating the archive to reconcile their internal data with the actual physical holdings. From this process, the project team created 9,500 records in the archive's inventory system, a first step towards formal cataloging of the collection. Challenges in this process include reconciling the 200 broadcast master episodes versions from holdings which represent rebroadcasts, B-roll, unedited footage, and segments created for the web only. As part of the collection deposit to UCLA, Over 32 banker's boxes of In the Life production papers and records were donated to the UCLA Library Special Collections. And that material has proved useful in fleshing out content details. The paper collection represents a very significant research resource, portions of which have already been scanned and placed online. So to date, under the guidance of head cataloger Annette Doss, the complete episodes are now all cataloged at the item level in the Mark 21 format, fully described, containing subject analysis and local genre form headings. In developing these catalog records, careful attention was paid to the current LGBT Library of Congress-controlled vocabularies, which in some instances seem dated or too clinical for the user-friendly and welcoming environment that we wanted to create. For example, a heading such as sexual minorities was avoided in favor of the more inclusive terms gays, lesbians, and transgender people. These public catalog records represent an important access point for the initiative, with the descriptive content to be repurposed across other aspects of the project. As the In the Life collection was donated with copyright to UCLA, our desire was to place complete episodes online for free public access. Conceptual planning for an online portal to represent the episodes to the public include tagging functions and user comment options to help create patron engagement and to build an active user community around the collection. And here is a screenshot of the completed live portal. The archive recently updated our existing website to Drupal 7, which has now established mobile and tablet functions for the In the Life portal. And here's another screenshot of the live portal in the Browse by Season mode. Currently, we have about 10 seasons of In the Life available for streaming access. In addition to the videos, the website portal includes pages to host scholarly essays to highlight existing research, writings, and resources of interest related to LGBT issues and topics in order to provide external context to the In the Life episodes. And here is a screenshot of an episode landing page, and you can see examples of our episode metadata that we are including on the research portal. But we also include a link to the episode's formal bibliographic record in the archive's OPAC. Phase two of the project, to launch later this year, will expand these episode pages to incorporate the user tagging and comment functions. Now, our plan from the start was to utilize YouTube to host the videos, as In the Life had already established an active user base on that platform, some of the postings having over 20,000 views. This was an active and engaged constituency that we did not want to lose. Given that the UCLA archive already had a university-approved YouTube channel, proceeding along this route seemed like a natural fit. Unfortunately, things were not as easy as we had anticipated. Problems emerged when we began to upload In the Life episodes, and we came under the scrutiny of YouTube's Content ID, which, for those of you who don't know, is a complex digital rights management system that allows YouTube to easily identify music and video that rights holders have registered with YouTube as under copyright. YouTube blocks any uploads with such content, and in the case of an alleged audio infringement, gives users the options to include rights-managed music if you allow a commercial to run ahead of your video, which we won't do. So while this may seem like a good incentive for right holders to monetize their YouTube content, this route would have a great negative impact to this nonprofit access project. Other options to proceeding include tools to replace the rights-restricted music with generic music, or tools to remove music altogether, leaving the rest of the video intact. So while the In the Life collection was donated with copyright to UCLA, the episodes themselves do contain quite a bit of third-party material that was licensed for limited broadcast use only. And obviously, those licenses have long since expired. So here you can see that the In the Life Goes Country episode with the song Midnight in a Perfect World is flagged by YouTube for removal. In addition to the music, some of the In the Life episodes contain third-party video content that was under limited license. For example, a commercial parody from Saturday Night Live, shown here. Our initial attempt to obtain formal gratis permission for the SNL clip was unsuccessful, So we began using YouTube's Big Brother content tools to extract this type of content with the least possible impact to context. So we have clear disclaimers on our website indicating altered videos, and the intact episodes will be preserved and available for on-site study at UCLA. They were probably just afraid that we would remember that the show used to be funny. In some cases, the content scrubbed by YouTube was such a major part of the broadcast episode, the final posting would be too dramatically altered to be acceptable. Here you can see 15 instances where clips were blocked by YouTube from the In the Life episode focusing on the 25th anniversary of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So in most cases, the archive can try and secure the original production releases presumably held by UCLA Special Collections, or in this particular case, since the original release could not be secured, the archive makes a formal plea to the original copyright holder. Once some form of proof can be secured, the archive can begin the formal claims dispute process with YouTube to proceed. We are currently still in process with this effort for episode 1009. Hopefully, we'll have more success than our first outreach with SNL. But even before the launch of our live portal, commercial access requests began trickling in. Many of these clients had viewed content on the old In the Life YouTube page, which we showed you earlier. For example, the archive was recently approached by the Discovery Channel's Investigation Discovery series. They were interested in creating a new reality TV show segment focusing on the very tragic murder of a Navajo transgender youth named Freddie Martinez, pictured here. The Investigation Discovery production team requested to utilize interview footage of Freddie's mother, Pauline Mitchell, for their new series. The mother's interview was clearly produced by In the Life, and the archive was able to locate the original release, granting rights to this and future licensees and successors. However, in addition to the interview footage of Freddie's mother, the production company also approached UCLA to license stills and additional footage from the original story for the program. This screen grab of the No Gays Here footage from the episode is one such example. In this particular case, we had an acquired footage cue sheet held by UCLA Special Collections, so we could identify some of the materials, but obviously other materials we weren't able to locate. So in closing, the Archives in the Life project has certainly been one of our largest digital access projects to date, and this has not been without a fairly significant learning curve. In closing, we hope you'll visit the site so you can see some of our updates that will happen in the next several months. We'd like to thank everyone at the UCLA Archive who helped with this project, and many thanks to Eric, Michael, the Executive FEOF Committee, and all the staff at the NFSA for having us here. Thank you so much.